behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
I'm Ben. As always, we are here with our super producer, Noel Convoy Brown, which I think I've used that name before.
How about Noel Propane and Propane Accessories Brown?
There we go. And most importantly, ladies and gentlemen, you are here. So without further ado, we'd like to jump into the show. Scott, hey, you know, we've got a lot of truck drivers in the audience, right?
Definitely do. We've heard from several over the years, and a lot about you know, systems like advanced speed control systems that,
sure,
that maintain certain distances, and about licensing. We've also talked about road trains, things like that in Australia.
You know, which is fascinating.
Enormous road trains in,
yeah,
Australia. But today we've got something a little different.
Yeah, today we got a letter recently from a listener named Rusty F. Rusty writes in to say, "Hey guys, I'm a truck driver and use your podcast to help me pass the hours while out on the road. I've been driving for over 35 years and have seen a lot of changes over the years. One thing I didn't see that is upon us now in the trucking industry is the adoption of tractors powered by compressed natural gas. I drive for a company that was one of the first to equip its fleet with CNG tractors. United Parcel Service was going to put out 1,100 trucks on the road this year powered by natural gas. I have found out that there is compressed natural gas and liquefied natural gas. One operates at 4,000 pounds per square inch, the other at around 150 pounds. I'd love to hear a story on these products."
Interesting.
So,
yeah, it is. Now, I've seen a few of these vehicles on the road, and do you have any kind of experience with CNG vehicles? I've got very limited experience, but I can tell you what I do or what I have seen.
The only thing that I have done is, you know, they used to have some city buses, mm-hmm, that were CNG.
Okay.
And so I had one of my buddies was working on the buses, and I got to check out some of the stuff, but I never drove one.
No.
No one in a position of responsibility would let me drive a city bus. played too much Grand Theft Auto.
I've never driven a CNG vehicle, but I've seen a couple up close and kind of been able to examine them. One was just a very cursory, experience with one. Camping in Killarney, Canada, long, long time ago, decades ago. And one of the vehicles that they used to get kind of up and over the hill from one lake to the next.
Yeah.
Just a straight shot up a mountain and straight shot down a mountain. Where we were carrying canoes, there was a vehicle parked on one side that was a Jeep. It was a Jeep Wrangler, probably an early CJ7 model, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was compressed natural gas. And it was interesting, it had these big tanks on the side and everything. And all we got to do was really look at it and say, "Well, that's interesting," and get back in the canoe and head on. The next time I came across one personally,
mm-hmm,
was my neighbor very recently. He's part of a local citizens patrol unit that gets to drive actual police cars that say citizen patrol or something like that, citizen police, that they kind of, they're helpers, I guess. He's gone through the full program, through the, I'll tell you the city. It's not the city that I live in, but it's Sandy Springs.
Okay.
And he lives right next door to me, but somehow is affiliated with the Sandy Springs Police Department. But he went through their training program, and the Sandy Springs Police Department has these vehicles that they've converted to compressed natural gas. And he was kind of showing me, he brought them home and he's cleaning them up because these cars get really filthy. So he brought it home and he was, cleaning the trunk and the interior and everything and making it look really nice. And I noticed that it had these big tanks in the back, and I asked him about it. And of course, I brought my kid over with me too, because here's a police car we can look around, right?
Right.
It has,
yeah,
everything, the full light bar, the badging,
the whole
and everything.
Line.
It's everything. He was describing to me a little bit how it worked, and it didn't seem all that much different than a regular gasoline-powered vehicle. That was what struck me most about this thing,
mm-hmm,
is that it's very, very typical of anything else you'd find on the road. So they're not dramatically different. We'll tell you about the changes or the differences.
Sure, yeah.
But it's a pretty interesting topic, really. And
mm-hmm,
they're doing this with big trucks, and that's what Rusty's question was about, was semi-trucks. But it kind of trickles down to medium-duty trucks and light-duty,
sure,
trucks.
Garbage trucks.
Oh, garbage. That's a very good one. School buses,
mm-hmm,
use this a lot, and we'll tell you
City
why.
Buses, yeah.
Yeah, we'll tell you why those. It's important that type of vehicle uses them. Another one would be cement trucks.
That's a good call,
cement
too.
Cement mixers, yeah.
So let's just jump into it this way. What
what is compressed natural gas?
What is compressed natural gas? Yeah.
An alternative fuel.
Right. It's an alternative fuel. We should differentiate because there's compressed natural gas and there's liquefied natural gas.
Sure. Both of which are essentially methane.
Yeah.
Or mostly methane, I'd say, CH4. Sometimes included with this, with the natural gas is propane, and that's where Noel's nickname comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Propane is, it comes from the same wells as you would get natural gas from, but it's a different chemical, that's C3H8. And, so methane and propane are different, but again, same wells.
Yeah. The only thing that I'm pretty upset about with this is, although I think that natural gas is a brilliant turn of phrase to make something seem cool, I wish they had gone with my suggestion, which was dinosaur farts.
That's really your suggestion.
Are you kidding? How many more people would buy a car? They'd be like, oh, it runs on dinosaur farts. Just the kitsch value alone.
Absolutely. I think they would. And, you know, kids would love it. Of course, they would prompt their parents to buy a minivan or something that runs on dinosaur parts.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of garbage truck companies predicate their decisions on the whims of their children.
Yeah, there are some consumer vehicles that run on that. And we've got a list of a few of those that you can find on the road. But
yeah.
But that does come with a couple of stipulations. And that is that, you know, there is some modifications required. And we'll talk about vehicle modifications, too. But just to get this out there right now. If you use compressed natural gas, you have to use very thick, reinforced steel tanks or very thick aluminum tanks. We're talking like half-inch thick aluminum tanks that are then covered with shatterproof fiberglass.
Yeah.
It's relatively easy to convert a vehicle. I mean, we'll again tell you the parts that you need, but
right.
it does require this large volume of expanded, you know, gas to be compressed into a small area. And that's why you have to have these very heavy tanks because they have to hold in all that pressure.
Ah, you're right. Thank you for reminding me, man. We can't go past that. So liquefied natural gas is just natural gas with an extra step. It's been cooled to a point that it is considered a cryogenic liquid.
Okay. Now, this is the big problem with liquid natural gas. Now, it requires less pressure. This is compressed down to the point where it is a liquid.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't say that. It's cooled down to a point where it's returned to liquid
yeah,
form.
Yeah, it's twice as dense as the plain old compressed natural gas, but it's got to be stored in some specialized tanks.
Yeah, and these tanks keep it at a negative 260 degrees Fahrenheit. That's how low you have to cool this thing.
Yeah.
You mentioned cryogenic. You have to wear special gloves to handle it. When you're refueling.
Mm-hmm.
It requires a bunch of extra equipment, and that takes up the space. So even though the tank can be smaller because it's not under as much pressure as CNG would be, LNG requires all this extra cooling apparatus that goes
right
along with it. Because imagine trying to keep your fuel down as cool as 260 degrees below zero Fahrenheit. That's got to be a ridiculous amount of equipment that you got to carry on board. If that was a small car or something, there's just no way. Something on like a bigger truck, like a class 8 truck or something, it's possible, but it's not all that practical.
Yeah. Here's another thing. One of the biggest issues with this kind of fuel at this point is the same thing that plagues a lot of other alternative energy sources, and that is infrastructure.
Ah, yes. Okay. So we're starting to get into the point where we're talking about some of the benefits and disadvantages.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, pros and cons. So you're saying that one of the disadvantages is infrastructure.
Right, yeah. So for every CNG vehicle out there, you would need a network of CNG gas stations.
Sure.
I guess that's like saying ATM machine or VIN number.
That's right. We'll let it pass.
All right. Just this once though. Keep me on my toes. But you know, you'd need CNG stations or you'd need LNG stations. The interesting thing here is, although it sounds like LNG would be the more difficult, station to build, right?
Mm-hmm.
The actual cost of it heavily favors liquefied natural gas.
Really? Okay, that's interesting that you say that because I have recently looked up a map of the United States with all of the listed alternative fuel stations here on the map. And I can show you this map. I'll kind of hold it over here.
Yeah.
It doesn't do much for our listeners, but I'm showing you the map.
Now, these I'll describe it. It is super dense on the eastern side. Mm-hmm. The vast majority, I would say more than two-thirds of the stations are located there on the eastern side of the states. There's some higher density out around the Pacific coast, but between the two, it's no man's land.
It's a long way in between, isn't it? Now, that doesn't tell the whole story, though, because this map, and I could sort this map, and this was the one that you were just describing, is all fuels.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's I should say all alternate fuels, so alternates to gasoline and diesel. And that includes things like biodiesel and CNG, electric, ethanol, hydrogen, LNG, mm-hmm. and propane. So that's everything combined that you're looking at there. Now, when I further sorted this down to compressed natural gas, here's what I found. Look at the top map here. Compressed natural gas. I should say this. The number of alternative fuel stations, 17,415. That's why you're saying it was very densely packed in here.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is on one page of paper, but 17,415 dots were what you were looking at. On this one, when I worked it down to compressed natural gas,
mm-hmm.
850 stations nationwide.
See, that's not going to work.
Now, the map, I mean, it does look like you could make a cross-country trip, of course.
Sure, if you were careful and stayed to the south.
Yeah, stayed to the south, because in the north there's just nothing, right? Now, I further reduce that down to the liquefied natural gas, the one we were just talking about that requires the cryogenic
LNG
temperatures.
Yeah.
76 stations in all of the lower 48 here in the United States. And looking at that map, you would have to very, very carefully plan your map, or your route, rather, across the United States. And, you know, sure, that may work for some trucking companies, but it's not going to work for everyone. And it's not going to work in consumer vehicles because people go everywhere. It's not like you're going to be restricted to staying in one region. And it's very rare that you can buy a car and say, I know for sure I'm not going to go outside of this this area here in New Mexico where I know that there are four stations nearby.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not all that common for someone to be able to buy a vehicle and say that. You know, like, this is my around town car, and that's it.
Well, let's talk about some pros.
Okay.
Because I think I agree with you. That's one of the biggest cons.
No, sure. And there's more cons. We'll get to them. But let's talk about a long list of pros. You're right. Without trying to sound like we're selling it, because we're not.
Right. Because we're not selling it. But here's one of the things that would definitely persuade me if I were the owner of a trucking company.
Okay.
LNG and CNG tend to be less hard on an engine than gasoline.
Really?
There's less corrosion, less wearing of the parts.
Okay, well, I'm going to take just a second to say one thing on the opposite side of that.
All right.
Is that if you are driving a diesel vehicle, there are lubricating properties within diesel fuel that are not contained within these natural gases. And that's one factor you have to take into consideration. I think there are ways around that with some of these bi-fuel vehicles, but which, again, we haven't even talked about that yet either. So getting back to that, though, you're right. That probably would be one reason to sway it, is because engine life is extended.
Yeah, engine life can be extended. Either way you look at it, that's a pretty good advantage. However, that's not necessarily the story entirely. Right?
No. When you say it's extended, we should explain why, because it doesn't react with the metals the way that the fuels would do.
Mm-hmm.
So things like, you know, not only the engine components themselves, the metal components, but also things like the exhaust system doesn't have quite the corrosion from within as it would with a normal gasoline engine or with a diesel engine. It's reduced when you're using natural gases. You know, other things we need to consider here, Ben, are maybe cost. Cost is way, way lower right now versus diesel or gasoline. And that's not always going to be the case. I understand that this is always in flux.
Right.
But in the last 10 years or so of oil production, of, you know, the way that we've used fracking and some alternate methods of drilling, mm-hmm. We've been able to, quite frankly, to mine or to bring up a lot more oil than we have in the past, a lot of more petroleum,
right,
which brings prices down. But that same drilling technology has also been a way to increase our production of natural gas as well. So, With more natural gas available, there's a drop in the price of natural gas, obviously, because, you know, mm-hmm. the supply and demand. So it makes perfect sense why the cost would be down, but it's significantly lower than diesel fuels right now, and a lot lower than gasoline as well. We're talking like maybe half the price.
Right. Which leads us to the question that we were talking about. The idea of using natural gas, whether liquefied or compressed, to fuel large commercial trucks. I just want to walk us through some of the context here.
Sure.
Is that cool?
Yes.
All right. So China has been, at least in the terms of liquefied natural gas, China has been leading the charge with over 100,000, liquefied natural gas vehicles on the road as of September.
Interesting.
2014.
Liquefied is what they're using.
Liquefied, so the cryogenic stuff. Yeah.
The dangerous stuff.
The dangerous
stuff. Well, I don't know if I should say that. Probably not dangerous, but, dangerous in handling, I guess.
Well, this stuff is moving, quickly to become, potentially a mainstream fuel for trucking.
Sure. And, you know, even here in the States, I don't know how it is over in China, as you mentioned, but,
sure.
When you're talking about natural gas pipelines and, you know, systems that feed, these different stations all around town. So, you know, in urban and suburban areas, often many of the densely populated areas have a pretty decent network of stations that you can get compressed natural gas. And I said, what was that number? Was it 850, I think, stations across the U.S.? That's a reasonable amount of stations. That's not a lot, but it's a reasonable amount. And when you get into centers like right here in Atlanta, there's several places just outside of town or even within town that you can get compressed natural gas, and that's because they have a pipeline that allows that.
Right. Yeah, and other places like Dillon Transport, Raven Transport, Lowe's, UPS, and more here in the States are converting to a parts of their fleet to natural gas. I think with UPS, they have 16,000 tractor trucks in the fleet, and they made 1,200 of them natural gas powered.
Hmm.
So that's not quite 10% of its fleet.
I see. And, you know, these conversions, if they are converting the vehicles, if they're not, you know, that way from the factory, they can be kind of expensive, I think.
Right.
Now, the cost of a retrofit, if you're going to retrofit a vehicle instead of having it come right from the factory.
Yeah.
The ballpark, here, just to give you an idea of this. So for a light or medium duty pickup truck, even not a UPS truck, so something in between this, about $5,000 to anywhere up to $11,000 to convert your pickup truck to something like this.
Wow.
And if you're going to go for, you know, the full deal Class 8 truck, which is, I think that's a big semi type.
Right.
The cost is around $30,000 to $40,000.
So per vehicle?
Per vehicle. So it gets really expensive. And then you got to figure, is it worth it to save, you know, $2 a gallon on fuel if you put this $40,000 device onto your vehicle or this retrofit system on your vehicle?
Right.
How long does it take you to gain back that $40,000? You know, and we're talking about a fleet of vehicles typically,
mm-hmm.
not just one vehicle. And then you have to remember that you also probably have to operate on what they call a hub and spoke arrangement. So when we talked about early on, we talked about, you know, school buses and
yeah.
city buses and cement mixers and vehicles like that, right?
Yeah.
That those operate on a hub and spoke operation, that they all come back to one central location every night.
Mm-hmm.
So they fuel up and they head out on the road and they do whatever they have to do, deliveries or whatever, and they return to that central hub location where they can be refueled overnight or, you know, during a shift change and then back out on the road again. Well, the difference between, like, you know, some of these big major companies that run that have semi-tractors that are out on the road that are constantly all, you know, crisscrossing the United States, it's not the same way. They're going to rely on finding, you know, locations that have compressed natural gas or liquefied natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tougher because you have to plan your routes accordingly to be able to access those. And then I saw something else, Ben. This is another little complication of this whole thing. Fuel times for these things. You know, how long it takes to refuel a compressed natural gas vehicle.
Yeah.
It takes between, and this is, there's a variation of this, so hang in there. It can take between 5 and 8 hours if you leave it overnight to fill or completely fill a compressed natural gas vehicle. Now, I know that seems like a long time,
mm-hmm.
and there's a version of this that's just as fast as, you know, filling a regular fuel tank. But if you want to do a complete fill, what they call like a more complete fill, I guess, it takes between 5 and 8 hours, and it's a less expensive option to do it that way. If you do a fast fill, which again happens just about as fast as it takes to fill like a diesel fuel tank or something like that,
mm-hmm.
Different process, but it doesn't quite give you the pressurization that you would get from a long fill. And I guess it's less expensive because of the convenience of doing it that way.
Right, yeah. There are pros and cons, and those are some good points, but it seems that despite the newness, despite the various pros and cons, companies, at least in the U.S., are giving this a go. And I am sure that part of that would be a calculation of the stability of a domestic natural gas supply versus something that is imported, or maybe, you know, not counting Canada.
Well, absolutely. And you know, we talk about our dependency on foreign oil and things like that. Well, this is something that is mined right here domestically and is available in abundance right now. So it's kind of the thing to do. I mean, but right now they say that we have a 100-year supply of natural gas here in the United States. And I know that across the world, you know, there are places mm-hmm. that have similar supplies. And so this is a very real possibility. And the modern types of mining that I'm talking about, the different types, the fracking and the horizontal drilling techniques, all that stuff just helps us, you know, grab more of the stuff out of the earth and allows it to be used. So I know that worldwide, this stuff, I think, is going to begin to be used much more frequently.
Right. Yes. Here's an interesting number. In 2011, the largest national fleet of natural gas vehicles was 2.86 million. Do you know who it was?
Who?
And it's a tough one to guess.
No, I don't know if I could even guess.
Iran.
Really?
Yes, because for a long time, the Iranian government has been trying to decrease their society's dependence on gasoline.
You are absolutely right. I never would have guessed Iran.
I mean, it's not the first thing you think of when you think of natural gas-powered vehicles, right?
No, for sure.
But these different solutions have been around in other countries for a while. Across the globe, people are looking into this as a viable alternative to typical, you know, petrol, black gold.
Well, sure. Yeah. And there's variations of this too. Now we should mention some of there's a couple things I want to hit before we end this podcast.
Sure.
And one was, the different types of CNG vehicles, what it takes to, convert a vehicle to run CNG.
Good call, yeah.
Because there's maybe like six or seven items that you need to include. And then a few consumer vehicles that are out there that you can purchase right now if this is the thing that you want. If something, mm-hmm. that you feel like you want to do. So let's start with the types of CNG vehicles. There's the bi-fuel vehicles, which is, CNG plus gasoline. So, again, two separate fueling systems on board and you kind of switch in between the two of them. Makes sense, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Then there's also dedicated vehicles, which are CNG only. Also makes sense. And then there's something they call the dual fuel vehicles. And you might think, well, what's the difference between a dual fuel vehicle and a bi-fuel vehicle?
Right.
Well, the dual fuel vehicles are CNG plus diesel. And that runs on a blend of diesel and natural gas. So it's not like two separate systems. This is one system working together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's both together. And again, that goes back to the part that I mentioned where, you know, the natural gas doesn't have the same lubricating properties as does the diesel fuel. So, working together, they actually make that work out quite well.
Mm-hmm.
So also we want to mention some of the conversion components. You know, how can you convert your vehicle to work on CNG? And we said, you know, some of the prices, it gets a little expensive.
Sure.
If you want to do this per vehicle, anywhere from, well, $5,000 to $40,000, depending on the type of vehicle you have.
Right.
But there's a few different components that you need to add to a vehicle or change around to make this whole thing work. First, you need a compressed natural gas storage tank, of course,
because mm-hmm.
That's different than your normal fuel tank. You need a fill receptacle, which, again, of course, you can't pump it out like you would normal gas. It requires something similar to the way if you've ever had a propane tank filled. It's something similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly, but similar. You also need special fuel filters because this is a different type of fuel. You need a pressure regulator. You need a, because again, high pressures that we're talking about, the extreme high pressures. Then you also need a compressed natural gas fuel feed system, which is different than it would be for gasoline or diesel.
Sure.
A dash mounted fuel selector, which, you know, you can switch between the two, you know, if you want to go back and forth between them. And then the last item on the list, Ben, would be the electronic control module because, again, it's not gasoline. So you have to
right.
control this differently.
Yes. Yeah. And that's something that can be, and that's something that can contribute to a fairly serious hit on the wallet at your initial cost,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yes.
And for everyone who says, but I'll save so much money, Scott and Ben, when the week I get this done, I don't know. There's another thing you have to watch out for because, the Clean Air Act, restricts people, has some rules against modifying fuel systems without certification.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do this yourself and you get pinched, it is possible that you would get $5,000 in fines.
Oh my gosh. So it's got to be a certified system in some way.
Right. It's got to be
somehow licensed.
Certified compressed natural gas installer.
And well, once you do that, though, it reduces greenhouse gases.
Sure.
And it also reduces tailpipe emissions. Now, greenhouse gases was a surprisingly low number because you are taking some compressed natural gas and then run it through the system. And what you get out isn't that much cleaner than what you would get running gasoline or diesel through the engine. Surprisingly, the percentages were something like 25 to 35% lower, you know, in greenhouse gas emissions. Now, the tailpipe emissions were significantly lower, something like 95% reduction in tailpipe emissions. So it's pretty good.
Yeah, it definitely does. It definitely does make a difference. And then also, you know, if you're playing the long game and you're concerned about finding the least expensive fossil fuel, then just with mining techniques and locations of stuff, natural gas seems like it's going to be abundant and cheap for longer than that sweet, sweet crude, you know?
Yeah, it definitely does. It seems like we're on the, still on the upsweep of this whole thing.
Right.
Now I mentioned that we were going to talk about just a few consumer vehicles, and really what I'm going to do is just laundry list these because I think if you look into them, you'll find, you'll decide for yourself if this is right for you or not. Now, I mentioned that, you know, the initial cost is a little bit more for a vehicle like this because it's fitted at the factory with different equipment. So, you know, instead of having just a fuel tank, it's going to have a fuel tank plus the system that allows you to switch over to CNG. And that includes a couple of big tanks that are going to reside in the trunk or, as you said, the bed of the pickup truck.
Right.
It's going to occupy some of the cargo area. But there is a Honda Civic that runs on natural gas. And I believe they have been selling that since about 1998. I think Honda Civic's natural gas is available at Honda dealerships in 38 different states. So if you're worried about, you know, where you're going to fill this thing up, you can go right to the Honda dealership and pick up the fuel. Now, I don't know what the cost of fuel is going to be at the dealership, but I can imagine you're probably going to pay a premium for that. There's also the Chevy Silverado 2500 and the GMC Sierra 2500, both heavy-duty pickup trucks.
Uh-huh.
And let's see, another one would be the Dodge Ram 2500 CNG, right there in the name, so you know that's a CNG vehicle. Mm-hmm. There's a Ford F-250 and a Ford F-350 that run on CNG, and there's also GM cargo vans that run on CNG. So you've got options out there. They're typically bigger vehicles outside of Honda Civic.
Right.
I know there are others out there as well, but these are the ones that we typically see on the road. And these are also vehicles that, you know, run on both. I mean, you can run, you know, CNG. You can also run gasoline or diesel, as the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
But at least it's out there. It's something that's available. It's an option for somebody who's looking for an alternative fuel.
Yeah, and I'd like to hear what you think because – I imagine the calculation for just an individual car owner versus, you know, whoever is in charge of fleet-wide purchases. I imagine those calculations are going to be vastly different.
Yeah, this is going to require a spreadsheet in any way. I mean, even if you're doing this with your own personal vehicle, it's kind of similar to buying like a hybrid vehicle. You have to do the whole cost benefit analysis. You know, is this worth it for me to pay more up front? For this vehicle, and we're talking about, you know, a significant amount up front, like maybe $2,500 extra for the Honda Civic up front.
Yeah.
And that was a couple of years ago. It might be even more now. I don't know. But $2,500 more up front for this, you know, just so that you have the chance to fill it up sometimes with CNG, knowing that, well, I guess we didn't even say this, but knowing that, you know, it requires, I think it's 5.5 pounds or something like that of natural gas to give you the equivalent of gasoline, you know, the same amount of energy. Not that that really comes into play when you're talking about dollars because it's less to fill up with that. So again, it becomes this calculation, this formula that you have to work out for yourself and decide if it's worth it for you.
Yeah. And just to end on some other things in case we didn't mention them. Let's see. We mentioned home refueling being expensive. I don't know if we mentioned driving range, but that always comes up.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's a little bit less for a CNG vehicle.
Right. Right. And,
but the combined systems can get significantly more.
Right. Which is why people are going with that combined stuff.
Yeah, the Chevy Silverado that we mentioned, the bi-fuel version of that vehicle has something like a 650 mile range, which is really good. But you know, the compressed natural gas part of that is less than if you were carrying the same amount of gasoline or diesel.
Right. Which makes you wonder what the selling point is. What's the value add?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's the same thing with hybrid vehicles, you know.
Yeah, yeah,
that's same fair. Argument. So,
but here's another pro.
Okay, good.
Okay, because I wanted to end on some pros.
Okay,
all right. You can use the HOV lane in some places.
well, you know what? That's pretty good. In cities like Atlanta, you know, where it's always crowded, the HOV lane is typically unoccupied.
Yeah,
well,
that's
motorcycles,
true.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've got a couple more pros, if you like. We can just list a few of these.
Absolutely.
All right, so interrupt me if you have to.
Okay.
We mentioned cost. We mentioned domestically produced and abundant. There's a growing infrastructure. So this thing is, you know, as we talked about, some of these expanding locations around, particularly in metro areas.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. Environmentally friendly, we mentioned that. Reduced maintenance, you also mentioned that. We didn't talk about safety. You know, you'd think that carrying around this compressed natural gas would be super dangerous. It'd be really a hazard. Well, it's contained within those tanks, and if there ever is a leak, the good thing about this is, unlike gasoline or diesel fuel that has fumes and pools, you know, below
right,
the vehicle.
Right, if, and is flammable.
Flammable,
right.
Of course, and if the tank ruptures. Of course, this is flammable, too, but if the tank is pierced in any way, this almost automatically disperses itself in the atmosphere.
Yeah,
so there's much less of a chance of a fire in a vehicle with a CNG system than there is in a vehicle that carries gasoline or diesel if a tank is ruptured.
You know, I'm glad you made that point because it's true that there is a this might seem counterintuitive to some people, but you have a better chance of your car not exploding.
Well, it's similar to the hydrogen argument. You know,
yeah.
That, people say, well, my gosh, I'm carrying around hydrogen fuel. How dangerous is that? But then when you realize that if there is a leak, the dispersal of that material is so fast and so dramatic, and it just goes right into the atmosphere, that the potential for a flare up from that is very, very minimal.
And with all that, it looks like, unfortunately, we have to head out for today.
Yeah, I feel like at the end there, we were just cramming everything we
could. I know. We didn't get everything we needed to. But, Rusty, we appreciate the letter. One thing we can say, not just to you, Rusty, but to everyone listening, Rusty and I were talking over email about if this is just a fad, a passing thing, or if it's a new trend that will continue. And, Rusty, on further consideration, I think you're right, man. I think it's clearly a trend that's going to continue, at least in the commercial sphere, because we see that natural gas has been used in countries around the world for, like, there's some version of it in Thailand for 15 years, with the taxi cabs and stuff.
And it works so well in those hub and spoke operations right now.
Right.
That once we get the infrastructure in place, it's going to be completely possible for the over-the-road other companies, you know, the ones that don't have a hub
right.
and spoke operation,
yeah.
for them to implement it as well.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see this continuing to grow, at least in the commercial sphere, if not in, like, the individual consumer sphere. And with that, we're headed out. We don't drive any natural gas cars, I think.
I don't know anybody in the office that has one.
Well, see, it goes back to, man, I'm telling you, if they would listen to me for the marketing, we could have that dinosaur fart Honda Civic out there on the road right now. Everybody would be driving one.
You're not giving that up, are you?
I'm biting in like a moray eel. I'm just going to lock my jaw on that one. No, I'll hopefully forget about it by next week. But maybe I'll write a letter to Honda. Right? I'm sure that they take those kind of suggestions.
Yeah, I'm sure that will get prompt attention.
Yeah, I imagine so. So guys, go ahead and check us out on Facebook and Twitter for more information. Check out our podcast on carstuffshow.com. If you haven't listened yet, I specifically recommend the one about the money you do or don't save driving a hybrid versus a standard car. That was a little bit of a bubble burster for some people.
It was a little math intensive on our part too, and but it was a fun topic, and I think a lot of people got the message.
It's something people need to know, and of course that's not the same thing as compressed natural gas, but there is a similarity to that situation.
Very much so.
And if you want to take a page from Rusty's book and write to us directly with some suggestions, all our best ideas come from our listeners, so go ahead and send us an email. We are
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.